A source close to the Vienna meeting said the U.S. response to Iran's unilateral commitment to the JCPOA should be a unilateral move to lift all sanctions. The Minneapolis police chief says former U.S. officer Derek Chauvin violated the department's rules during the deadly arrest of black man George Floyd. Turkey's president slams his quote political coup, a statement by retired admirals critical of his plans for a new canal in Istanbul. This is World News coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you. Well, our top story, a source close to the upcoming Vienna talks on the fate of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, said that Tehran will not accept any result of the meeting but lifting all sanctions. The Iranian source said the United States has no other option but to remove all sanctions in a verifiable manner. It stressed that U.S. Special Representative for Iran, Robert Malley, will leave Vienna empty-handed on Tuesday if the outcome is anything but lifting of all sanctions. The source said the U.S. response to unilateral commitment of Iran to the JCPOA should be unilateral lifting of all sanctions. The source reiterated Iran's stance that it will reverse its retaliatory JCPOA steps only if the U.S. lifts all sanctions. The comments came after the U.S. said it expects the upcoming talks to be difficult.
We don't underestimate the scale of the challenges ahead. These are early days. We don't anticipate an early or immediate breakthrough, as these discussions we fully expect will be difficult.
The spokesperson added that the steps Iran and the U.S. need to take to salvage the international agreement will be on the top of the agenda in Vienna.
A meeting that has raised hopes to revive 2015 Iran nuclear deal. After the withdrawal of Washington from the agreement under Donald Trump, it is said the United States will be part of this meeting in Vienna to hold separate talks with the signatories. Tehran says the Islamic Republic will not hold any negotiations with the U.S. regarding the deal, stressing that first off, all the sanctions must be lifted.
The roadmap is quite clear, removal of sanctions of the United States, which has been imposed by the United States against Iran, extraterritorial sanctions and illegal sanctions that the United States has imposed on Iran altogether should be removed. In response, Iran is also ready to stop the remedial measures which has been implemented in response to the non-compliance by the United States and the other parties in the JCPOA.
A representative of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization would be there. And if it is true, would you please tell us what does that mean?
The delegation of the Islamic Republic of Iran is actually leading by His Excellency Araghchi. The delegation is consisting of different people, including dignitaries, including experts from Iran's Atomic Energy Agency. It does mean that there is an agenda for tomorrow.
Khatibzadeh also added that the Tuesday meeting will focus on returning the other JCPOA signatories to their commitments. A video conference was held on Friday, led by the EU participants, to discuss a full return of the US to the JCPOA. Participants also emphasized their commitment to salvage the agreement and discuss ways to ensure the return to its full and effective implementation. Earlier, Iran's foreign minister urged the European signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal to play a constructive role in the upcoming meeting and the agreement. Mohammad Javad Zarif made the remarks in separate phone calls with his British and French counterparts. The U.S. reimposed illegal sanctions on Iran after it withdrew from the nuclear deal. A year later, Iran began rolling back its commitments, saying the remaining parties, including Europeans, have failed to compensate for the U.S. pullout.
Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif will not be in Vienna for the talks as he is on a tour to four Central Asian countries. Therefore, the Iranian delegation would be headed by Deputy for Political Affairs Said Abbas Araghchi. Human Abedi, Tehran.
The sixth day of trial of former U.S. police officer Derek Chauvin for murdering an African-American has been held. The Minneapolis police chief says the neck restraint method used by Chauvin during the deadly arrest of George Floyd violated the department's policy.
is it your belief then that this particular form of restraint, if that's what you, if that's what we'll call it, in fact violates departmental policy?
I absolutely agree that violates our policy.
Are you aware now that the defendant maintained this position on George Floyd for 9 minutes and 29 seconds?
I am aware of that.
I believe you testified that force has to be reasonable when it's applied at the beginning and through the entire encounter. Is that right?
That is correct.
The police chief said Chauvin broke rules and ethic codes, adding that his actions were not part of police training. Arredondo noted that he was alarmed when he first saw the video of Chauvin kneeling on the neck of handcuffed Floyd for more than 9 minutes. Chauvin, who is white, has pleaded not guilty to murder and manslaughter charges. The defense team has argued that Chauvin did only what he was trained to do in his 19 years as a police officer. 46-year-old Floyd's death sparked massive protests against U.S. police brutality. Our correspondent in Washington, Wyatt Reed, tells us more about the trial of former U.S. police officer Derek Chauvin for murdering George Floyd.
The testimony, of course, by Chief Madeira Arredondo, Minneapolis police chief, was notable in a lot of ways, most specifically in that it's almost unheard of for police to testify against one another, let alone the chief of an entire police department. That in and of itself, this kind of violation of what is referred to often as the blue wall of silence, the refusal of police to indict one another, to testify against one another, no matter how egregious the wrongdoing, that goes a long way in protecting dirty police. And that's something I think it is quite significant to see a police chief, of course, of all people, breaking that wall of silence. Notable also in terms of simply the refusal to mince words by the police chief. He said this was absolutely a violation of policy. He said that the chokehold, the maneuver employed by Derek Chauvin in no way, shape, or form represented department policy.
The number of coronavirus-related hospitalization in the U.S. has increased as the country witnessed a steep rise in cases for the third week in a row. Health officials have expressed concerns about the rise in cases as new variants of the disease are circulating. Last week, 27 out of 50 states reported an increase in new cases. The U.S. remains the world's worst-hit nation with over 555,000 deaths and more than 30.7 million confirmed cases. Meanwhile, Brazil, the second worst-hit nation, reported some 29,000 new cases. The latest figures push the country's caseload to more than 13 million and deaths to nearly 333,000. Protesters have gathered in the German capital to express their anger at the government's coronavirus measures to curb a third wave of the pandemic. Ralliers criticize the restrictions, which they believe infringe their rights. The protest comes following a nighttime ban on gatherings in the capital, which came into effect on Friday. Authorities in Berlin said the restrictions on people's movement will be from 9 p.m. until 5 a.m. This is the first limited curfew which has been imposed in Berlin since the pandemic began a year ago. The city of Hamburg has also restricted nighttime outings. COVID-19 has so far claimed more than 77,000 lives out of nearly 2.9 million confirmed cases in Germany. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan slams as political coup a statement by former admirals that criticizes his plans to develop a shipping canal in Istanbul.
This is definitely an ill-intended attempt. The duty of retired admirals, 104 of them gathered, is not to publish statements about a political debate that includes an implication of coup.
The planned canal will connect the Black Sea north of Istanbul to the Sea of Marmara in the south. It will be parallel to the Bosphorus Strait, which is governed by Turkey under the 1936 Montreux Convention. Erdogan said he has no intention to drop the convention, but in the future he may review it. The statement by the retired admiral says it is worrying to open the Montreux Treaty up to debate. Turkish police later detained 10 of the admirals. The Turkish military staged three coups between 1960 and 1980. Erdogan's government also survived an attempted coup in July 2016. A prominent rights group has warned against the attack on freedom of expression and a rise in authoritarianism in Jordan amid a political turmoil in the kingdom. Human Rights Watch says a wave of arrests in Jordan over an alleged plot against the ruling family is a testimony of a diminishing space for freedom of expression and political dialogue. The HRW warning comes after Amman accused former Crown Prince Hamza bin Hussein of involvement in a conspiracy to destabilize the kingdom's security. The prince, who is the king's half-brother, was placed under house arrest while his bodyguards and at least 16 others were detained. On Monday, Hamza, however, signed a letter declaring his support for the king. That's a day after, in a video recording, he denounced the ruling system as corrupt. To discuss that story further, I'm now joined by Kevin Barrett out of Madison, Wisconsin. Kevin, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for joining the program. First, I want you to ask you, how do you comment on the state of freedom of expression in Jordan and the warning by the Human Rights Watch?
Well, there's not a whole lot of freedom of expression in Jordan, as we all know. All of the mosques in Jordan, for example, are controlled by the government, and the government is indirectly controlled by the U.S. Embassy for the most part. So this whole issue of freedom of expression in Jordan is actually kind of a red herring. I think the real issue here is what's going on with this alleged coup attempt. And I think that the information offered by Richard Silverstein at his Tikkun Olam blog is probably correct. He says that there was indeed a coup attempt in which Hamza bin Hussein, the ex-crown prince, attempted to overthrow King Abdullah with the help of Israel and Saudi Arabia, and indeed that an Israeli Mossad asset named Roy Shaposhnik was part of this plot. And Shaposhnik is apparently, Jordan says he's ex-Mossad, but he's actually current Mossad. He's a Sayanim, and the Sayanim are, of course, the Mossad's little helpers scattered all over the world. So it looks like the Saudis and Israelis together wanted to install a more pliable regime in Jordan to give the Saudis control, or at least partial control, of the holy places in occupied Palestine. That's at least what Richard Silverstein is reporting, and his sources are often pretty good. So I would take that as the most likely scenario.
And the question is, as the turmoil unfolds, how do you think it would affect Jordan's ties with the U.S., Israel, and the Gulf states?
Well, right now, the real axis of evil in the region is, of course, Shaitan Yahu and Bin Shaitan. That is the extremist lunatic psychopaths running Israel and so-called Saudi Arabia are devious and cunning, out of control, and disliked by most serious American specialists and foreign policy professionals, of course. So it's not as if Israel and Saudi Arabia are completely under control of the United States. They're a little bit out of control, and perhaps even more so now that the Biden administration is in office and they have some differences of opinion with both of the shaitans. Of course, the Biden administration is another shaitan in its own way. But in any case, I think that the American side probably is out of the loop, as it is in so many other places in the world now. The U.S.-dominated unipolar world is dead. And in the region, there's a clash between the axis of real evil, which is Bin Shaitan and Shaitan Yahu, versus the forces of liberation in the region, the people who want to liberate Palestine, and the axis of resistance. So that's the real action. The U.S. is increasingly sidelined, trying to keep its place as a key force in the region, but it's really getting embarrassing now. So we'll see what happens here. But I would hope that King Abdullah of Jordan would be offended by this coup plot and would find a way to push back against the Israelis and the Saudis. and perhaps by moving a little closer to the axis of resistance, maybe that's a pipe dream, given that the U.S. embassy, which is a monstrous embassy that controls all of the communications in Jordan, basically runs the country. But maybe King Hussein still has a little bit of pride left. We certainly hope so. I'm sorry, King Abdullah.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining the program. It's always good to talk to you. That was Kevin Barrett, an author and Middle East expert, joining us out of Wisconsin, Madison. Well, moving on, Palestinian children continue to pay a heavy price of Israeli inhumane practices as they mark Palestinian Child Day. Israeli forces have killed and maimed thousands of Palestinian children in recent years and continue to violate their rights on a daily basis. Ashraf Shannon brings us more in this report.
Palestinian children continue to suffer due to Israel's inhumane practices as they mark Palestinian Child Day. Israeli forces have killed and injured thousands of Palestinian children over the past decade under the watchful eye of the international community. Last year alone, Israeli forces killed 9 Palestinian children. During a press conference marking the annual event, Palestinians demanded that Israeli forces be held accountable for their crimes against Palestinian children.
Israeli soldiers are acting with impunity because they feel that they will not be prosecuted for their crimes. Such policies have encouraged Israeli soldiers to violate our rights. The international community must take concrete steps to prosecute those Israeli soldiers who kill and maim us on a daily basis.
Scores of Palestinian children lost their lives during the Great March of Return peaceful rallies due to Israel's use of excessive force against peaceful protesters. According to human rights organizations, the Israeli attacks on Palestinian children were systematic.
As we mark Palestinian Child Day, Israel continues to commit grave violations against Palestinian children, including wounding them and killing them. Israel also violates the social, economic, and cultural rights. The Israeli blockade has negatively affected all aspects of life for Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip.
Since 2008, the Israeli regime waged 3 wars on the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming thousands of children. During Israel's 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including hundreds of children.
The Zionist enemy violates the rights of Palestinian children to live. They have bombed the homes where Palestinian children live and have deprived them from receiving proper education and health care. Palestinian children are even deprived from the right of movement.
Palestinian Child Day highlights the ongoing plight of those born under Israeli occupation and blockade.
Human rights groups have long accused the Israeli regime of deliberately targeting Palestinian children. This comes amid the failure of the international community to hold Tel Aviv accountable for its crimes. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
At the opening session of Israeli Prime Minister's corruption trial, prosecutors accuse him of illegitimate use of power and trading favors like currency. The prosecutors said Benjamin Netanyahu introduced regulations that funneled deals worth hundreds of millions of dollars to owners of a popular news website. In return, Netanyahu asked them to give him positive coverage on their website. The premier faces 2 additional cases on charges of bribery, breach of trust, and fraud. After the hearing, Netanyahu slammed the prosecutors and branded his trial as a coup attempt. He is the first sitting Israeli prime minister to stand trial for corruption. The proceedings have undermined his prospects of remaining in office after the March the 23rd election, in which his party once again failed to win an outright majority. Well, that's your world news for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
According to the report by Gallup and West Health, 18% of U.S. adults, around 46 million people, say that if they needed access to quality health care today, they would not be able to cover the cost. The same percentage of adults report that amid a deadly pandemic, someone in their household has opted to skip needed care over the past year due to inability to pay. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson, writer. This article is published under the heading, 46 million in U.S. say that they would not be able to afford needed health care. Stay tuned for the details, please. A new study released recently shows that nearly 50 million Americans would be unable to afford quality health care should the need for treatment suddenly arise, a finding seen as further evidence of the immorality of a for-profit insurance system that grants or denies coverage based on a person's ability to pay. People can't afford their government health care. Tist Foss, a proponent of single-payer healthcare, tweeted in response to the new report. Families spend less on food so they can make insurance payments. This problem is felt by all, but concentrated among poor people and black people. The American model of health reform, throwing money at private insurers, cannot solve it. The rot is pervasive and it runs deep, Foss added. People who can't afford health care just don't get health care. Wealthy men get to live 15 years longer than poor men. We have condemned poor children to die from things which do not kill rich children. In America, sickness makes you poor. Poorness makes you sick. Then you die. According to the report by Gallup and West Health, 18% of U.S. adults, that is around 46 million people, say that if they needed access to quality health care today, they would not be able to cover the cost. The same percentage of adults report that amid a deadly pandemic, someone in their household has opted to skip needed care over the past year due to inability to pay. The chances of any given household suffering from this form of healthcare insecurity are inversely related to annual household income, with 35% of respondents from low-income households, those earning under $24,000 per year, reporting foregoing care in prior 12 months. Gallup's Dan Reuters notes in a summary of the study's findings. That is five times the rate reported by those from high-income households, 7%, defined as earning at least $180,000. Dr. Vikas Sanai, president of the Lone Institute think tank, told The Guardian recently that, unfortunately, it's not surprising that millions of Americans can't afford health care. It is, however, shocking and kind of outrageous, Sanai added. U.S. system has been structured for many years on the basis of private health plans and very deep dysfunction politically and within the medical industry. Americans have been facing this mammoth problem. It was there during and looks like it's going to be after the pandemic. Americans want and need, I'd say, a radically better healthcare system. The study comes 2 weeks after a group of House Democrats led by Representatives Pramila Jayapal and Debbie Dingell unveiled the Medicare for All Act of 2021, sweeping legislation that would transition the U.S. to a single-payer healthcare system over a 2-year period. The new system would guarantee comprehensive medical care to every person in the U.S. for free at the point of service, eliminating premiums, copays, and deductibles. According to an analysis released by consumer advocacy group Public Citizen earlier this month, a Medicare for All system likely would have prevented hundreds of thousands of coronavirus deaths in the United States, which has the highest COVID-19 death toll in the world. There is a solution to this health crisis, a popular one that guarantees health care to every person as a human right, and finally puts people over profits and care over corporations, said Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. That solution is Medicare for All, everyone in, nobody out. In their new study, Gallup and West Health show that over 80% of Americans support setting caps on out-of-pocket costs for both prescription drugs and general health care services for those who are insured by Medicare. 60% of Americans support making Medicare available to everyone, according to the report. The study also finds that 65% of U.S. adults support lowering the Medicare eligibility age from 65 to 60, a proposal that congressional Democrats are reportedly planning to include in a forthcoming legislative package.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and here is a thought-provoking saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the salvation for mankind in the end times. The world will not come to an end until a man from my progeny and of my name shall be master of the world. When you see a green ensign coming from the direction of Khorasan, then join them, for the Imam of God will be with the standards and will be called Al-Mahdi.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
I thought Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatih al-Jinan, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all
the keys away. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it. And that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. We're still talking about how you deal with yourself, how you are able to find life skills for the purpose of you becoming a better person individually, yourself. And therefore, in this book, Mafatihul Hayat, on chapter number 10, Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli starts to discuss an important topic which we regularly do, and that is traveling. And there are many places in the Holy Quran and also in the Sunnah of Ahlul Bayt that speak about how beneficial traveling is, calling it, referring to it as sayr, referring to it as safar. You know, siru, qul siru fil ard, journey around the lands and the earth and see how it is. Another verse in the Holy Quran says, is God's earth, is God's land not vast enough for you to be able to migrate to different places and see how different things are and different places are, different civilizations? Without doubt, there is always going to be a lot of benefit in a person traveling. And that's why it's a sunnah for one to find times in order for them to travel and have journeys. We know that even when it came to our own imams, they would travel frequently, whether it be towards Makkah al-Mukarramah for Hajj or Umrah, or whether it be to other regions and other cities as well. And we can see that it is also the seerah of our ulama as well, where they always tried to travel around and making sure that the main purpose for their traveling was for them to seek knowledge, to seek experience, to see how others are, to share knowledge and experience as well. And that's why this beautiful piece of poetry attributed to Imam Ali alayhi salam is always mentioned in this regard, where he says, wasafir ففي الأسفار خمس فوائدي. Travel, because in traveling there are five benefits. فسافر ففي الأسفار خمس فوائد. تفرج هم. Number one is that you relieve yourself from grief and sorrow, that it's a time of relaxation. واكتساب معيشة, that it could be a source of income, a source of sustenance. اكتسابُ معيشةٍ. وعلمٌ, it could be a way for you to gain knowledge. وآدابٌ, number four is, it could be a way for you to experience mannerism, for you to learn etiquette, for you to learn adab. And the last is, وصحبةُ ماجدي, and for you to be able to accompany a righteous person, for you to be with someone who is noble. وَصُحْبَةُ مَاجِدْ. Majid, majid means nobility, it means righteousness.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
And so these kind of things that bring about that importance of why we should travel. Of course, we know that there are adab of safar. Most important is that you choose the day of your traveling. Remember that there's this whole issue of calculating al-qamar fil aqrab, when the when Scorpio is aligned with the moon, and the important dates that they have, which is very, very makruh for a person to travel when al-qamar fil aqrab. And alhamdulillah, the good thing is on the internet you're able to make the calculations and find in these certain sites like rafid.net, and you'll be able to just put in your the date that you have, and it'll tell you whether al-qamar fil aqrab or not. Also remembering that there might be certain days which is better for you to travel in, like for example Saturday. To start off your traveling, always start off your traveling with making sure that it is a travel, it is a trip that you are going to benefit from. It is a trip that is free of sin. Always remember that if you were to travel, wherever it may be, wherever it may be, and that traveling will entail sin in it, it will be a wretched trip. It will be a trip that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give you, of course, a lot of damnation for, in the sense that you won't even be able to pray qasr prayer. You have to pray tamam prayer. And of course, that kind of negative sin, what's the point? What's the benefit in it? Which is exactly why there are so many ad'iyya that it is recommended for you to recite when you are going to embark on a trip. Remember that you also need to make sure that your parents are happy with your safar, and or else it'll turn into safaru ma'asiyah. That your husband is also happy with your trip, and you leaving the house. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to The Light. A baby capybara has found a new family at a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali after she was abandoned by her mother soon after birth last December. The little capybara is 3 months old and is under the care of a surrogate mother who is in charge of providing her with the skills she needs for optimal development. The baby capybara was rejected shortly after birth by her first-time parents. But the zoo hopes that in a couple of months, she will be able to unite with another female of the same species.
A As the COVID-19 pandemic has affected most sectors in one way or another, a Swiss tech firm has created a robot that can disinfect airplanes in a few minutes. The startup called Uvea says the robot emits powerful ultraviolet lights as it slowly moves down the aisle, killing 99% of bacteria and pathogens, including the coronavirus. The company says a robot can disinfect a single aisle in 13 minutes. The startup co-founder says the UVC technology has been used for decades in hospitals and labs. He says the fact that the rays could be harmful to humans prompted them to seek an autonomous robot that can carry out the task.
It's quite an old technology, but it's quite dangerous. That's why we want to take the worker out of the range of the light. So that's why we made a robot, because there is some solution when you are near the light, and that's dangerous. So we really had to make this system autonomous. So we switch it on, we leave, the machine makes the disinfection, all the plane, all around, and then it stops automatically. So the worker are not in contact with the machine.
The company is hopeful that technology could help restore travelers' confidence in safe air travel and help bring the worst-hit aviation sector back to its feet.
Now, in Egypt, more than 20 ancient royal mummies have been paraded to a new museum to be displayed in greater splendor. The mummies include 18 kings and 4 queens who were taken from the Egyptian Museum in central Cairo's Tahrir Square. They were transferred to the National Museum of Egyptian Civilization in Fustat, which lies some 5 kilometers to the southeast of the capital. The ceremony aimed to drum up interest in Egypt's rich collections of antiquities at a time when tourism has entirely stalled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Archaeologists discovered the mummies in 2 batches at the complex of mortuary temples of Deir al-Bahari, located on the west bank of Nile. High-tech light displays at the Beijing International Light Festival provide an immersive experience to visitors and create a miraculous night scene by illuminating the sky. The festival is held in a major urban park in the Chinese capital, Beijing, also a popular site for enjoying cherry blossoms in the spring. As the sun goes down, the park is illuminated with a high-tech light show every evening, and nature's beauty is heightened, that is highlighted, with a little help from technology.
The theme of our show this year is Blue Space. We've created a universe in which there's the blue planet. The visitors come in as explorers from Earth, they board the spacecraft, and it takes them to the blue planet. And the installations they see in the park are different biolandscapes on planet blue. There, they need to complete several tasks, which are the interactive installations we've set up. So the exhibition is immersive and interactive.
The exhibition uses 19 different types of lighting equipment to give visitors an unforgettable experience. This is the second year for the Beijing International Light Festival and will last until October 2021.
Painting eggs is a beloved tradition amongst Christians, especially Orthodox, on the occasion of Easter, symbolizing the resurrection of Jesus Christ. A veteran Hungarian artist has taken that craft to a whole new level. 67-year-old Tunde Chuhai has been designing eggs for decades. Each of her delicate creations takes days to make. Chuhai uses various kinds of eggs and says the best one comes from geese. She starts her craft by emptying the eggs through tiny pinholes before washing and then drawing patterns on them. The veteran egg designer says her style is so unique that she doesn't have to sign her eggs.
I never sign my eggs, as everyone knows they were done by me.
I don't have to particularly prove that I did it because my style is so distinctive, even though others may use similar techniques.
Shuhai's decorative Easter eggs are very popular, so she has to work all year round to meet the demands. Her work is internationally recognized and has featured in galleries both at home and abroad. This year, however, her miniature creations have to stay at home with her due to the coronavirus pandemic. The young British man, who is no stranger to danger, takes his life in his hands, free climbing one of the highest skyscrapers in Europe. George King made his way to the top of a 116-meter hotel in the Spanish city of Barcelona without any ropes or safety measures. The 21-year-old scaled the building in only about 20 minutes. However, as he was climbing down the building, he was arrested by police. This is not the first time the British daredevil has risked his life with such a nail-biting climb. Last December, he scaled Barcelona's iconic Agbar Tower with a height of 144 meters. In 2019, he also free-climbed the 310-meter Shard building in London. The feat, however, earned him 6 months in a young offenders center.
A chocolate maker in the Belgian city of Bruges has come up with a novel recipe to boost business in the run-up to Easter.
When you're a classic chocolate maker, make very classic recipes. Caramels, praline, marzipan, and it's okay. We have classic bonbons too. But I think today, the customer wants to go on adventure, also when they are eating something.
The chocolatier's special concoction is a praline made of grass juice, Granny Smith apples, and an East Asian type of lemon. He believes chocolate contains a secret ingredient that can counter the lockdown gloom. Belgium is known as the chocolate capital of the world. The northern city of Bruges is in particular renowned for treating your taste buds to quality cocoa. However, the coronavirus pandemic has diminished foreign tourist numbers, with businesses now relying on local customers. This is heart-melting. A video of a stray cat carrying her sick newborn kitten to a veterinary clinic in Turkey is melting hearts online. Veterinarians were confused as a cat walked into their clinic clutching one of her kittens in her mouth. The cat then meowed for a long time and brought in a second kitten of hers. After a quick examination, the vets noticed that the kittens couldn't open their eyes due to an eye infection. The clinic staff immediately treated the animals, helping them open their eyes after a while. The stray feline and her kittens were placed in adoption after the completion of their treatment. Nothing marks the start of spring in Japan like cherry blossoms. This year, people try to enjoy the sakura season safely by observing health protocols. Scores of Japanese have flocked to Tokyo's Ueno Park and along the Meguro River to see stunning cherry trees in full bloom. The light pink flowers symbolize fresh starts in Japanese culture. The cherry blossoms generally last from April to May. Thanks to this year's warmer weather, trees have blossomed earlier than usual. However, the number of people coming out to enjoy the season has fallen sharply due to the coronavirus pandemic. Some sakura festivals around the capital were also canceled.
In the heart of one of the oldest districts in the U.S. state of California, there is a historical little printing house that is receiving a new lease on life. The building and its equipment were slowly dying out, and its machines were good for scrap. The iconic printing house was on the verge of bankruptcy until a group of artists revived this beacon of traditional typography. They used what was already present in the building, including the tools and hand printing knowledge. Artists are able to print their new age designs using these old printing methods. Some of the machines date back to the late 1800s. La Linterna was first founded to print newspapers. Later on, it began printing cinema and concert posters for famous artists.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Floods are the most common disaster in the United States, and the 2020 hurricane season was the busiest to date in the Atlantic, 73% more active than normal. The Washington Post reported with a record number of storms breaking ground on U.S. soil, totaling $37 billion in damage. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Lena First Arai, writer. This article is published under the heading, Flood Risks Are Rising Amid Climate Change, but U.S. Congress is Delaying Action. Here's the details. Floods are the most common disaster in the United States, and the 2020 hurricane season was the busiest to date in the Atlantic, 73% more active than normal, the Washington Post reported, with a record number of storms breaking ground on U.S. soil totaling $37 billion in damage. The frequency of what is known as sunny day or high tide flooding linked to sea level rise and visible as water bubbling up from storm drains into city streets is also on the rise in the U.S. In 2019, the median flood frequency doubled from 2,000 levels up to 4 days per year. That median is expected to rise to 6 days this year. By 2050, high tide flooding could reach 75 days annually. Given the heightened risk that the federal government's own data reveals, delaying the implementation of a system that takes those numbers into account is like putting your head in the sand and trying to ignore it. Caroline Koski, executive director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania, told USA Today. The National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP, was created in 1965 primarily because private companies were not interested in insuring floods, as the Center for Public Integrity reports. The program, which backs over 5 million homes and businesses, is administered by FEMA, but requires regular congressional approval, and it has gotten repeatedly tied up in partisan politics. They have been kicking the can for almost 2 years now, Janie Babishi, director of the New York City Mayor's Office of Resiliency, told the Center for Public Integrity. But the overhaul is actually far more overdue than that, as the risk rating structure that premiums are based on have not been updated since 1970s. NFIP collects an estimated $4.6 billion in revenue from policyholders each year and delivers more than $1.3 trillion in coverage. The government flood insurance program was sold